From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The House Intelligence Committee on Wednesday voted to send a number of witness transcripts from its own investigation into Russia-related election wrongdoing to the special counsel Robert Mueller. The committee, which is now headed by Democrat Adam Schiff of California, hopes that Mr. Mueller will be able to prosecute instances of perjury among some of President Donald Trump's current and former colleagues that have come under the investigation's crosshairs. The committee also launched a new probe into Trump's foreign business deals to determine if the president's decisions on Russia might have been influenced by his desire for personal financial gain. Trump took great umbrage at the announcement, lashing out at Schiff and calling him a political hack. Trump has claimed that no other president has ever faced such scrutiny. Of course, there has been no other president with as many conflicts of interest as Trump. My guest is Craig Holman, government affairs lobbyist for Public Citizen. Welcome to the program, Craig.
Oh, glad to be here.
So let's talk about what specifically the Intelligence Committee is doing with respect to its transcripts. So as I understand it, the committee has had its own investigation into election-related wrongdoing. But up until last November, up until this January, really, that committee was headed by Republicans. After the midterm elections last year, that changed. And now you have Adam Schiff, who can make decisions on what to do with all of that information that was collected. And already we've seen Roger Stone, a longtime associate of Trump, being charged by the special counsel specifically for lying to the Intelligence Committee, right?
That is correct. Let me tell you, it's a very different atmosphere we have going on in Capitol Hill today. Since the Democrats have taken over the House, things are changing. Things are beginning to happen. Prior to this new 116th session, the Republicans were basically trying to cover for Trump at every turn. We had Devin Nunes, who was the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, you know, quickly conducting his own investigation on whether or not there was any kind of Russian collusion. And they, of course, found nothing at all, no evidence. Over the objections of the Democrats, they shut down the investigation in March of last year, saying there's nothing here. The Democrats were screaming, but since they were the minority on the committee, they couldn't do anything about it. So that investigation just shut down, finding very little, finding almost nothing. And it all changed in this new session when the Democrats took over. And what really triggered Adam Schiff's declaration on Wednesday that he's going to open up a whole new investigation was Donald Trump's State of the Union address, where Donald Trump said, you know, and that ridiculous investigation, partisan investigation going on against the president. The following day, on Wednesday, Adam Schiff announced, well, this ridiculous partisan investigation is going full scale, and it decided that he's going to open up an entire new investigation and focus on the wide swath of activities. Not just whether or not there was Russian meddling in the election, but also any sort of ties, not only Trump, but the Trump family and associates may have had with Russian businesses, whether or not those ties gave Russians leverage over Trump or the Trump family, Jared Kushner, Don Jr., anyone else in the family, and he's going to take a look at whether or not there may have been obstruction of justice. So it's a big investigation. And just on Thursday, Trump, you know, tweeted, this is a, you know, just sort of presidential harassment. I mean, so Trump is very annoyed. Adam Schiff is going ahead with a full investigation, and it's about time.
So there seems to me that the committee is claiming a broad mandate. I want to hone in on one specific aspect of it. I mean, the Russian hackers will do what Russian hackers will do. We know that there are hackers. We know that some of them are linked to the Russian government, etc. But what really matters, of course, for Americans, who, especially those who elected President Trump, is what did President Trump do during his campaign in using this idea of him running for president to potentially have some sort of personal financial gain? We know he was interested in a Trump Tower in Moscow. We know that he and his then campaign chair, Paul Manafort, attempted to contact Russia, the Russian officials. He desperately wanted to have a Trump Tower in Moscow. He wanted business dealings in Moscow, in Russia, and he did not expect to actually win the presidency. So if we sort of look back at what happened in 2016, you might imagine that Trump was basically looking to enrich himself in Russia while using the presidential campaign as a vehicle. Now he's president. The committee is going to look at all of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, take a look at the scope of what Adam Schiff is planning on looking at. You know, first of all, to back up, what we do know of Trump's organization of his wealth, we know he owns at least 500 different businesses that span 23 different countries and had a great deal of interest in opening up business activities in Russia. Adam Schiff plans in a couple weeks to have Michael Cohen testify before his committee. And Michael Cohen may have been instrumental. He was the fixer for Donald Trump, his lawyer who was handling a lot of these activities.
You know what? You're right. And I should correct myself. I said Paul Manafort earlier, but it was actually Michael Cohen who was attempting to make those connections in Russia. There's so many figures here that it can get confusing.
I know. I mean, just so many scandals that it's like numbing. But anyway, he's bringing in Michael Cohen in about 2 weeks to testify before the committee. And this starts getting to the heart of whether or not there may have been some economic, business, financial incentive for Trump to, you know, and the Russians to work together in a form of collusion when it came to the presidential election. So this is getting to the heart of it. You know, collusion itself is, in order to try to prove that and whether there was any illegal activity going on, you've got to start getting to the heart of it. And the heart is, where is the money? And is there a financial incentive for Trump? And Michael Cohen is going to be key to demonstrating that. So will, by the way, Roger Stone, depending on how much Roger Stone is willing to disclose. And that remains to be seen.
Right. He has so far at least made it very clear that he remains extremely loyal to the president. So there's the issue of financial conflicts of interest, there's the issue of potential collusion, there's then the an obstruction of justice, but then there's this simple issue also of perjuries, which in going back to what we started talking about, in turning over all of the witness testimonies that the House Intelligence Committee gathered last year under Devin Nunes's leadership, in turning those over to Mueller, I imagine that a lot of Trump's current and former associates who spoke to that committee are also frightened about what it might reveal to Mueller. If they said different things to the committee and different things to the special counsel, they could get caught in perjury charges, right?
Yes, indeed. You know, that highlights a very significant failure of the Republican House Intelligence Committee. Once they decided to close up shop and just not look any further, they weren't also helping Mueller in his investigation. So finally, the documents that they were able to uncover are now being turned over to Mueller. Not all of them are being released publicly yet because they have to go through security review, but they are being turned over to Mueller. So we've got a House Intelligence Committee that is now participating with the Mueller investigation instead of trying to obstruct or prevent the Mueller investigation. Things are changing here very quickly. It's kind of an exciting time to be on Capitol Hill.
So, during his State of the Union address on Tuesday night, Trump set up this sort of either or scenario. Either we can have peace and legislation or war and investigation. You can't have both. It doesn't work that way. Nancy Pelosi shot back the next day. First of all, she accused the president of bringing a threat to the floor of the House. And then she said, it's not investigation, it's oversight. It's our congressional responsibility. And if we didn't do it, we would be delinquent in our duties. And I'm wondering if you can step back and remind us of what it is that congressional oversight means, that, you know, we have this president who basically thinks he's above the law, who does not think that anybody should examine anything he does. But we have a system of government that was set up with a, you know, flawed but still pretty comprehensive a set of checks and balances. And among those checks and balances is congressional oversight over any potential issues that the president might be involved in, right?
We have three separate branches of the federal government, the presidency, the executive branch, Congress, and the courts. And none of them have absolute authority over the other. It's always a process of checks and balances, of each branch, you know, trying to do its role and somehow, you know, working with the other branches. When we've had a complete Republican control over the last 2 years, with a president who has specifically announced that he, as president, has no conflicts of interest, that the conflict of interest codes don't apply to him, that many of the laws that apply to you and I don't apply to the president. When you have an executive branch that is going that far out there, it is the absolute role of Congress, especially the House, to have oversight to make sure the president is still working in the public's interest and not out there pursuing perhaps his own interests or in any other way undermining the whole system of checks and balances in the federal government. This is the role of Congress. And under the Republican rule, especially under Devin Nunes, they've just fallen flat on their face, much to the comfort of Donald Trump. Adam Schiff is not going to fall on his face. Adam Schiff is going to fulfill what his role is, and that is to oversee the White House in the public's interest. And boy, that has really annoyed Donald Trump.
He has claimed, as you said earlier, being the victim of presidential harassment. He said no one has ever been scrutinized in this way. Barack Obama was never scrutinized in this way. But of course, Obama didn't have those. He wasn't a multi-million dollar businessman with endless international business entanglements. I mean, just this week, we heard the story of T-Mobile executives found to have been renting, 52 days worth of hotel rooms at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., right around when they wanted approval from the Trump administration for a mega merger with Sprint. I mean, whether or not Trump made that happen, clearly there are, entities that may feel like they could curry favor with the president by staying at his $2,300 a night hotel. So this is a whole different kind of beast, isn't it?
It's a whole different kind of beast. But first of all, there has been scrutiny like that. Richard Nixon was under intense scrutiny by the House and the Senate, which eventually led to his resignation. When it comes to Barack Obama, I mean, he just hasn't had that many conflict of interest scandals in his whole administration. So there wasn't that much to look at. He did not hang on to his property as he became the president that poses a conflict of interest. That's something I really want to emphasize. We have this conflict of interest code, 18 USC 208, that requires everyone in the executive branch to divest themselves of any property or ownership that causes a conflict of interest. Now, it doesn't legally apply to the president, but prior to Trump, every president over the last 40 years has done so. I mean, Jimmy Carter even gave up his beloved peanut farm in order to comply with 18 USC 208. Donald Trump walks in with his 500 business interests and declares that the president can't have a conflict of interest and refuses to give up anything. If, you know, any of your listeners, when you come to Washington, D.C., you should take a look at that Trump Hotel. I mean, it's just adjacent to the White House, and it is teeming with lobbyists who are trying to find ways to throw money at the feet of Donald Trump. It is teeming with foreign agents, with foreign government officials who keep renting these rooms. Saudi Arabia, you know, rented something like 500 rooms right after the election at the New York Trump Hotel, not the D.C. Hotel. But it, by Trump hanging on to these properties, he has opened the window wide to conflicts of interest and given an opportunity for those who want to influence him an easy way to do so. You can just throw money at the feet of Donald Trump, and he seems receptive to it.
Now, Craig, one way to find out about some of his conflicts of interest is to be able to examine his tax returns. This became a huge issue during the campaign, as has been the custom. People running for president have released their tax returns for decades. Now, Trump was among the first in decades to refuse to do that. Now, the House Ways and Means Committee is under pressure from grassroots groups to demand that Trump release his tax returns. And I'm wondering if you can just briefly comment on that. What legal authority does that committee, which of course is also headed now by Democrats, have to demand Trump release his returns?
They have full legal authority to do so.
They can subpoena that?
Yes, they can mandate it. Under federal law, the House Ways and there are three different congressional committees that have this authority to demand anyone's tax returns, including the president's. And the House Ways and Means Committee is one of them. They have the authority as long as they can demonstrate that that demand is consistent with their legislative congressional purpose. They can demand Trump's tax returns. And that is what the House Ways and Means Committee is under pressure to do. And I believe they're probably going to carry through with this. The release of the tax returns is something that every president has done, again, over decades. Trump is the first one who hasn't done so. We do know, and just on Thursday, there is news reports coming out that the Treasury Department is trying to plan some sort of legal obstacle against the House Ways and Means Committee from demanding those tax returns. And according to news reports that are leaking, that legal obstacle is they're going to try claiming that the Democrats are going to leak Trump's tax returns to the public, and therefore they are not entitled to receive these confidential tax returns.
Wow.
There's no reason to believe that is the case, but the Treasury Department is planning on dragging its feet here.
Wow. So, what is holding the House and Ways and Means Committee back? I know that there's been a number of organizations, including people who organized the Tax March in 2017, who are demanding that with Democrats in power, they need to make this happen right away. But it seems as though the Democrats are biding their time. Are they just sort of making absolutely sure that they're, you know, crossing their T's and dotting their I's?
The House Ways and Means Committee under Richard Neal, he's the new chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, has made it no secret that they just want to operate prudently. Mm-hmm. They do want to get those tax returns. They do want to see what the conflicts of interest are, but they don't want to come off with a public appearance that they're just, you know, jumping on top of the president like attack dogs. They want to pursue this very prudently. Richard Neal has said cautiously is the word he uses, but I've got a feeling even Richard Neal is starting to get a little fed up with these delays and the obstruction from the White House and the news now that we know of from the Treasury Department. So expect to see some action coming out quite soon out of House Ways and Means.
So finally, Craig, the Democrats, when they won the House last year, announced that one of their first actions in Congress would be to unveil a sweeping anti-corruption bill, H.R. 1, which they are doing now. And it has many, many parts to it, some of which directly address the kinds of conflicts of interest that Trump seems to have been entangled in, which, you know, had we had such a thing in place, maybe we could have prevented some of the things that Trump has gotten into. And of course, the Republicans are not happy. Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, is extremely unhappy just even about the voting accessibility aspects of this bill. He called it a power grab. How important is H.R. 1? How far would it go toward addressing some of these conflicts of interest that Trump is entangled with?
I really want to highlight how important H.R. 1 is. This is a sweeping reform bill that has taken a look at everything that's gone wrong in terms of ethics, campaign finance, voting rights, gerrymandering under the Trump Republican administration, and addresses all aspects of that. I mean, this bill is about 570-some pages long. It addresses almost every aspect of it, and to show how serious the Democrats are taking this reform bill, they introduce it as their first order of business. As soon as the 116th Congress convened, H.R. 1 was the first order of business that was introduced. It's sweeping legislation. Now, I'm strongly in support of it and working to promote it. So is really, quite frankly, most of the progressive community, including labor, environmental groups, civic organizations, religious organizations. We're all behind this. And trying to make it a little stronger. When it comes to the Conflict of Interest Code, for instance, the 18 U.S.C. 208, H.R. 1 doesn't quite go to the point of declaring that the president is subject to 18 U.S.C. 208. Instead, it says it's the sense of Congress that the president is subject to this. We're trying to push the Democrats to say, no, go for the whole thing. I mean, just apply the law to the president and to the vice president. And the Democrats are very receptive to that. So we'll see if we can make that kind of amendment to strengthen the bill yet even further. But the bill is sweeping. The bill is strong. I haven't seen legislation like this in my entire career here on Capitol Hill.
Well, Craig, give out a website for Public Citizen where people can find out more about the work you do.
Yeah, citizen.org. That will take you into our main page. And from there, you can take a look at all the different types of projects we focus on. We focus on everything from trade issues to governmental ethics, campaign finance, quite a few issues. And you can easily navigate through our webpage.
That's citizen.org. Craig, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Craig Holman, government affairs lobbyist for Public Citizen. We've been discussing the House Intelligence Committee's oversight of President Trump. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.